Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Everybody, to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Shwene Bloom. This is episode 196. I am joined on this post-draft lottery podcast episode to celebrate staying at 11th, not moving down for once, amazingly. I'm joined by Prez, that's at Presidente on Twitter. Prez, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing all right. I had something happen that put this in perspective for me. I was at a work event and a buddy of mine is a Pistons fan. He's from Detroit. And I didn't realize that they had dropped from 2 to 5. That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, that sucks. I also don't care. They got the number one pick last year. Like, that's fine.
That's true.
So I'm not going to feel bad for them. I think they're fine. I will say this. I think in some ways, it'll be a blessing in disguise for them. I think Ivy's going to drop to 5.
I think someone will take Sharp.
I don't see why the Kings. Or, you know, well, let me do the thing first, and then we'll get back into this. Before we get started, I have to announce Strickland has Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to this podcast every Friday that I do with Prez. It also gets you access to the mailbag that I do every other week with Jeremy and Drew. Furthermore, you get access to the Strickland Discord where the conversation never stops. Draft channel has been popping since the lottery. There's further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to my solo pod, Stricken Roll. That also gets you access, much more importantly, to wonderful weekly articles by the tremendous, talented duo of Matthew Miranda and Jack Hundley, two of the best in the business. Beyond that, there's further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those get you access to a variety of other benefits like listening in on pod recordings, live watch parties, merchandise discounts, and if you listen to the Monday pod, even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, the Knicks got the 11th pick, but I want to finish this conversation we were having before I had to deliver the wonderful Patreon pitch. The Kings can't take Ivy. They can't because, like, they know that doesn't work with De'Aaron Fox. And they know this because him and Haliburton didn't work. And him and fucking, what's his name, hasn't worked that well either. Davion Mitchell. So why would you take Ivy? I don't think they can take Ivy.
I don't think Sharp is that much better. I don't think Sharp is meaningfully bigger than Ivy. That's the thing.
But his play style is different. Very different. That's the big
but
problem.
But you're not, if you're drafting Sharp that high, it's not because you think he's like destined for anything less than very high usage.
Right. But his usage is derived extremely differently than Ivy's will be. Ivy's usage is like, yeah, he can shoot, obviously, which is good. But he's not a guy that you're going to be like running fucking pin downs for and flare screens and having him run around screens to pop off. Like that's not what he's going to be. Sharp can do that. Sharp could probably will be doing a lot of that to start.
I mean, maybe he could, but it's not like that's not what he's done. He's been an on-ball three-point. Like his whole thing is on-ball three-point shooting, like step backs and sidesteps and pull-ups. He wasn't really like running. I mean, what high school student is doing that, right? So like, that's what I'm saying. So he might be able to do that shit, but like, he's not like Mathurin to me, where you're like, okay, this is his thing, like running off-ball screens and Korver-type movement threes. I think, to me, if I'm the Kings, I'm taking whoever's better of the two of them, because, like, either way, Sharp has longer arms by a little, but he's also, like, 30 pounds lighter and not quite as... I mean, he's athletic, like, vertically, but he's nowhere near as fast as Ivy on either end, so... I'm just taking who's better, because either one of them is like, you're going to have to play them with the other two if you really believe in all of them. It just is what it is.
Yeah, I just can't see it then. Then I don't think they'll take either, because yeah. I don't see how that happens.
They'll definitely be picking up the phone, like, especially, I mean, I forget who tweeted it, and, you know, it could be like a LOL Kings tweet, like, oh, they just got Sabonis, so they'll trade the pick for help now. But it's not really either or, right? Like, you can trade that and stay in the top 10, get a young prospect who fits better and get some help, right? Like, you can get a very legit player from some team if you're dealing the fourth pick, even in this draft, like, that's worth quite a bit. So I can see them keeping it and just figuring out, you know, undersized backcourt later, but I could also definitely 100% see them seeing what's up with the offers.
I think they're definitely trading it then. Like, if there's just no way, because they're like, McNair is in the last year of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
He has to win. Yeah. So he doesn't have time to fucking sit here and, you know, go through.
That's the other thing with Sharp. It's like, whatever Sharp is, it's not paying off next year. Like,
well, like, I mean, that's the thing with Ivy too, is he's developing, obviously, hopefully you would, the best form of him is probably as some kind of primary. Yeah. But more importantly, like, you already know that this team concept of, like, De'Aaron Fox with another guard who needs the ball a lot, we have, especially one who, look, I mean, Ivy has the tools to be a good defender, but he's not a good defender right now. And he's not going to be a good defender as a rookie, because 90% of rookies are not good. So, like, we already know that does not work. If you need to be winning games, like, you're not doing that. So, I just don't see how they keep the pick, or even if they do, I don't see how they draft one of those two guys. Which, look, I guess that's probably the perks of the guy. If you have an executive that has some secure job security, he doesn't have to pick with that pressure on him. So sucks for them. sucks for Kings fans, really, more than anybody. But this is not a Kings podcast, contrary to popular belief. This is a Knicks podcast. The Knicks got the 11th pick.
Whatever.
Yeah, I cared, but I did not. I was not upset. I was like, okay, yeah, that's fine.
Did you watch,
like,
live?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
So, you know, I think it's fine. They got the 11th pick. They were supposed to get the 11th pick in their kind of, like, most likely outcome. Nobody that is super annoying jumped. Like, the Kings are the only team that jumped into the top four.
It's annoying that they jumped, but it's not, like, fuck this bullshit level annoying.
Well, it's annoying because you're like, they probably will fuck it up because they're the Kings, but it's not annoying in a sense, like, they're not a team that moves up all the time, I guess. So, like, it makes it less annoying. And they're just, like, they've had terrible luck. They're the Kings. Like, it's fine. I'm not going to be upset that they moved up.
I'm a little upset just because, like, they've had luck and squandered it in a lot of ways. And like, Fox is, like, I remember, like, that draft, Fox was my favorite player. He wasn't number one for me, but he was my favorite player. And I was, like, hoping the Knicks could jump up and get him. And instead, these fuckers jumped up. And, like, we rightfully over hyper analyze his game, because, you know, he's at the point in his career where it's put up or shut up and it's almost time to make a lot of money. But, like, you know, you take a step back and it's still he's still a 25 point per game point guard who's going to get a huge amount of money. And
he already got a huge amount of money.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, I don't know why I conflated that. And then Obviously, they could have had Luka, and they chose fucking Bagley.
Yeah, I mean, that pick is insane.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, as far as, like, we often talk about the luck of jumping, but less discussed is the luck of being bad in the right class, and they've been bad in the right class twice. Like, not all four. What was De'Aaron Fox pick? Four?
Five.
Five? Yeah, not all five picks end up as good as De'Aaron Fox. In fact, I would say most of them don't.
And Lonzo wasn't, for sure.
Yeah.
Lonzo hasn't. Who else went above him? Fultz? Fultz hasn't done shit, really.
Right. Right. And I mean, the Fultz thing was weird, but yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, whatever. Like, we could pick apart his defense and his shooting, but, like, the guy is, like, 25 to somewhere between 25 and 30 a game. Penetration. Pretty great athlete. Like, you know, he's going to. What does he make per year?
Like 30 something?
Yeah, 30 something. Yeah, like, fucking. Like, there are lots of top five picks that are much worse than that, especially fucking fifth picks. So they got super lucky for jumping in the correct year, and then they got,
well, you could say that, but they also are a little bit unlucky because the pick they actually had in that draft was the third pick in the draft, but they had traded away the swap rights to that,
mm-hmm.
which Philly exercised. So Philly actually had the fifth pick. They exercised the swap, so they get the third pick, and then they traded the third pick to Boston along with another Kings future one for the wonderful, the truly, truly wonderful Jason Tatum for the first pick. But Jason Tatum got drafted with a third pick. That could have been the Kings. It could have been the Kings. But it wasn't. They got De'Aaron Fox, which is terrible. They also, I actually don't think they get enough shit for passing on Luka. Like, I gotta see
none here. None of the teams do. None of the teams do. It's horse shit. Like, we're gonna have to wait until this motherfucker is inducted into the Hall of Fame before we, like, LOL, the Blazers passed on Michael Jordan. These teams to death, and it's fucking insane. Like, are you shitting me? Like, we're broken records on here. This is a Knicks podcast. If the Knicks fucking passed, we get shit because we passed on
Donovan Mitchell.
No, we get shit because we didn't draft fucking the New Orleans guy, Herb.
Oh, yeah,
Herb Jones. Imagine we passed on a fucking express ticket Hall of Famer who's basically white NBA Jesus, like.
We get shit on because we, like the Donovan Mitchell one is crazy to me, though, because this isn't, like, Luka was actually, at the time, there were plenty of people who said he should have been number one. I don't think anybody had him lower than two. And, like, so, effectively three teams passed on Luka, by the way.
Yeah. Okay?
Because the Suns passed on him, the Kings passed on him, and the Hawks effectively passed on him because they had the third pick and they traded out. And that trade, like, and it's like,
every single one of those teams doing that is completely indefensible.
Like, the thing is, like, when Michael, okay, so Michael Jordan gets drafted third, Hakeem goes one. Nobody shits on the Rockets because the guy they drafted ended up becoming a top 10 player of all time, like a truly generational player who just happened to be in the same draft as the greatest player of all time. Like, Trae Young is really good. You love Trae Young a lot. Yes. I don't think you would ever put, like, they're not in the same class of
players. I was going to bat for Trae Young hard, and I was correct up this motherfucker, and I would laugh in your face if you offered me on draft night, like, if you're like, oh, if you got the number one pick, would you trade it for Trae Young? Hell no. Like, and I would, it's still laughable now. Like, it's just so, I mean, we don't need to.
They didn't even get a fucking good pick out of it. They got like a top five protected first out of it. And they used it on Cam Reddish, who, bless his heart, is, like, hopefully going to be a solid rotation player in the NBA.
Unless that pick turned into Victor Wembanyama, then it doesn't matter what the pick is. Like, this was just, he was so it was so obvious how insane he was. And some of the things that I heard from people, there's, like, the stupid people who actually did have him outside of the top two, but the actual there were smart people who sometimes said things like, well, he's so skilled already. How can he, you know, what is he going to do better in the NBA? That's the kind of, literally, that was his main critique, was aside from, like, oh, he's not athletic, is he's so skilled that he can't get more skilled. Like, do you realize how insane that is? Like, that's crazy.
I think my one concern about him was, like, how heliocentric his play style was, and I also was a little bit concerned because I took some of his bad shot selection on like step back jumpers and fadeaways and stuff as maybe he's not good at actually getting separation, but it was just he had stupid shot selection. Like that's what that was. And he still has like pretty, he has some interesting stretches of shot selection to say the least, but he's so fucking good that it really doesn't matter. But yeah, look, like I think we can revisit this topic a little bit later, but I'm actually like looking at that 2019 draft now to think like, is there some player outside of the top five they could have drafted where you'd be like, okay, maybe this is somewhat reasonable. Like maybe the overall value of this.
What, the Fox draft?
No. The Luka thing. There's just nobody. There's like the best player after the top five. So they took Cam Reddish at 10. The best players are probably like Cam Johnson at 11, Hero at 13. Then you got.
You mean like overall or like value?
No, just the best players overall. Like Brandon Clark at 21, Grant Williams at 22. It doesn't matter if they picked any of those guys. Jordan Poole at 28. It literally does not matter if they picked any of those guys to go along with Trae Young because that's how good Luka is. It's just insane.
That, like it doesn't matter if it was Ayton or Jaren or Bamba or Carter or like literally anybody. It doesn't matter. Michael Porter Jr. got a fucking max deal and it doesn't fucking matter. Like,
yeah. All right. Well, look, the Knicks have the 11th pick. There's a few things to talk about. Personally, this is just me. I would like to see them trade up. I would like to see them trade up for Shaedon Sharpe. But if they like, I mean, I don't care. I think they should trade up for somebody they believe in. If there is somebody that they believe in that they think has star power that isn't, you know, one of the top, they're not going to move up to the top three. Like, there's no chance they can move up that high. I think those three guys, which are going to be Banchero, Chet, and then Jabari, I'm almost positive those will be the top three picks. Like, I don't think any of those teams will be interested in anything the Knicks could offer in trade anyways. So to move up to the would probably take like mortgaging a shit ton of your own future draft capital, which doesn't make sense to me. But like, I think four might be attainable for stuff we discussed earlier, like because the Kings will want to win.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about like what you see as, like the ballpark level of offers that would be needed to get to that, anywhere from like 4 to 8. I know those aren't necessarily the same.
I mean, think four, I feel like 4 and 5 in this draft. I'm not sure this is true. This might not be true for everybody's boards or everybody's teams or whatever the fuck, but like, it does feel to me like there is that, like, I think it's kind of separated now where there's that top three, those three power forwards. And then there's like two, where it's Ivy and Sharp, and then it's like a flat range, it feels like, after that, from 6 to whatever. So I would think to get to 4 and 5, you might, like, maybe it's something like you give up 11, you give up next year's pick unprotected, and then you give up, a piece that one of those teams wants. So you're not going to give up RJ or Quickly, I don't think, in that scenario. I could understand why somebody would feel like it's worth giving up Obi to move up in that scenario, but I don't think the Knicks feel that way, and I wouldn't do that. Not for somebody in this draft, anyway. Other drafts, I would probably consider it, but not in this draft. I would not. So I think it would be like that, like the 11th pick, next year's pick unprotected, and maybe some other kind of future first rounder. It could be a protected one. It could be like, it would have to be protected, but I don't know what it would be. I doubt adding the Dallas pick would get you much because, again, Dallas is
locked into being great. Yeah, exactly. Barring like, Luka injury.
Right, exactly. They're in the Western Conference Finals. Luka's 23 years old. Like, you know, like they're, no team is going to value that pick as anything more than, okay, this will be like the 26th pick or something like that at the best, right? So yeah, maybe you give up, then you give up the Knicks' own like 2025 first top 8 protected or something like that. I don't know. I'm just ballparking here. And then, you know, maybe you can, you know, if it's the Kings and they want to add a win now piece, maybe Detroit wants to add a win now piece too. Like, would a player like Alec Burks or Evan Fournier be appealing to them? I think Fournier would definitely, he should be appealing to Sacramento because they have no fucking shooting. And if you're are building something around De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, at the very least, like, yes, the defense is going to be problematic. It's problematic anyways, but like, you absolutely need shooting. And is Fournier the perfect guy to add to that? No, but the guy can fucking shoot the ball flat out. So maybe he's appealing. Burks, maybe he's appealing. You know, is Randall appealing to either of his teams? I don't know. I wouldn't think so, but who knows? Maybe Detroit has a move set up for Jeremy Grant, so then they have an open spot at the four, and that makes Julius Randle appealing to them. I don't know. Just kind of spitballing here. But that's what I think an offer would require, is the pick this year, an unprotected future one next year, some kind of protected pick, or depending on the value teams assign to the vets, a couple of vets pieces. I don't know. That's what I would think would be the value. I really think getting to like 6, 7, 8 is just like our pick this year and a top 4 protected pick next year, and then unprotected the year after. I would do that, by the way. If they like somebody, like let's say Sharp drops to 6 and they can make that deal, I think they should do it. You know, you have the built-in protection then of like, well, even if we suck, but and we happen to move up in the lottery to a top 4 pick, we at least protect ourselves for that, because that is a draft where you want to have that protection. I would maybe even consider dropping to 3, or like making it a top 3 protection, so that, yes, you expose yourself to the potential for, if the pick moves up to 4, it would convey, but like, you know, like I think that's a risk worth taking if you really are high on a Shaedon Sharpe or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always a big fan of going to get your guy. Unless you get unreasonable, and that's not reasonable. That's not unreasonable at all. Like, next year's pick isn't that good. I mean, it's a great draft, and any pick can be useful, right? But like, it's not significant. Dallas is too good. And they're getting better. And yeah, a protected pick, that's really all you have to do is protect against the jump. And like, if you protect against the jump, but not against like the double jump, where like you jump and then other teams jump and push you back, then that's pretty rare. So I think that's a gamble I'd be willing to take. If it means getting Sharp, or, you know, I don't know who else would be their guy who they couldn't also get at 11. I mean, it's one thing I go back and forth on, and I'm curious to know what you think about, is like, we have some data from the combination of Perrin's time here and Wes's time here in New York, and then also Perrin's time in Utah, to like sort of read the tea leaves in terms of what kind of players we have drafted. But I'm still hesitant to say this player is a Perrin, or this player is a, you know, a Knicks type of player, because the sample is so small, and we've seen them kind of, with our higher pick with Obi, kind of throw their normal preferences, alleged preferences, to the wind for a different type of player. So I don't really know. I don't feel confident at 11 or
okay,
6 even to know like what is a Knick player.
I honestly think this, just seeing the combine measurements today, I really think if they are at 11 and they know they're not keeping Mitch, I think they might just take Mark Williams. I could totally
see that. I know Walt Perrin is fiending for... So for people who don't know, like, Perrin famously drafted Gobert.
And it's not just that he drafted Gobert. It's like the type of center he likes, and what this team, like, I mean, you look at the guys they've kind of chosen to have at center so far over 2 years. They are rim-running bigs with extremely good vertical pop and...
Guys who move well and are very, very athletic and very gigantic. And I'm pretty sure, even if you look at, off the top, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure if you look at like Gobert's backups in the Perrin years, it's probably the same shit. You know, white side ass players and shit like that. So Williams, for people who aren't fucking nerds looking at combine measurements on Twitter real time, had a 9'9" standing reach, which is like the most bigger, preposterous.
It's more than Gobert.
Mitch is 9'4". Gobert, I think, is 9'7".
Yeah, it's like 9'7½".
Yeah, and he's, you know, Williams is obviously like 240-something pounds, I think.
Which is already like, that's man strength.
Yeah, and like, remember, he's not a freshman. He's a junior, so he's like a grown-ass man out here, and his strength advantage was very real in college, and in a lot of ways, he was, you know, Paolo was obviously the guy, the bucket getter and all that, but Williams was really the integral player for that Duke team on both ends. If you watch them, like on defense is more obvious, but even on offense, he got a ton of post-ups. You know, they were relying on him to crash the glass and get putbacks and stuff like that. So, he's really talented in his own right. And, he has mid-range flashes. Sometimes it looks really good. Sometimes it looks kind of weird, but,
he's 21, right?
Yeah, he's 21. So he's not old. He's not young either.
Which, by the way, the 21-year-old thing, that is in line with how they've drafted.
Oh, yeah.
They have taken guys that they feel are more ready to contribute. Now, that could be a function of just the board. And also, like, outside of the 8th pick, I don't mind prioritizing, like, guys that you feel are plug and play later in the draft. Especially, you know, they picked at fucking 19 and 32, or they picked at 21, or they ended up picking up at 25, 34, and 36, and 58 in last year's draft. And then the year before, they ended up picking at 8, and then obviously 25 were quickly went. And to their credit, like, I think the guys they picked are dudes that can play but still have some upside. Yeah, so, whatever.
I could also see them doing a very, like, Brock Eiler thing, because, you know, Williams is not going to likely make it. So Charlotte picks 13 and 15, and he's not making it past 15. So
are we sure about that? They did draft Kai Jones last year.
Kai is cool, but I don't know. I don't know what the fuck they're doing developmentally, so I can't really say.
My thinking has been, like, they did fire Borrego. You have to think some of that is because they
could play Kai more.
Right, he just didn't play any either. Forget just Kai, like Book Knight, obviously.
Yeah.
Even JT Thor, like, I think he actually played the most out of those three, but he didn't play much.
It's definitely possible. But I don't know. Kai has a lot of strengths, and rim protection wasn't really one of them, even though he was a physical specimen in his own right. So, but then again, maybe Charlotte doesn't give a shit about rim protection, right? All they care about is offense. So, like, it could be possible that they just are like, nope, yep, we're going to play Kai because we think he can shoot and run and do all that shit that doesn't win games. And we're going to ignore Merk Williams and his ridiculous defense. So it's certainly possible. But if I'm the Knicks, I am picking up the phone and calling. Who's their GM?
Kupchak.
Yeah, I'm calling Mitch and I'm like, yo, we're going to take Merk Williams. You want a deal? And seeing what they say. Just to see if they, in case they are thirsty, because
you want to give us LaMelo?
Yeah, exactly. I have an offer you can't refuse. No, just give me, like, it. Because again, say the Knicks are at 11, Charlotte's at 13. Say there's a guy they really like, but that guy is gone and they can't trade up, whether it's Sharp or Davis or someone else. Then you're looking at another tier, and say the next guys you like are, it could be Tari Eason, it could be Jang, and or whatever, and you could be pretty confident that one of them is going to be there between 11, 12, 13, and just say, hey, maybe we pick up like a first for moving down two spots, or a protected first, or some shit like that. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see. They can definitely, it's really, and I said this in our lottery reaction roundtable, but I wouldn't be surprised, trade up, trade down, or trade out. Like, any of these options to me can be defensible in the right situation.
Yeah, I just want to say with Merk Williams that I don't know much about this draft. He's just somebody that when I watched
Duke this year. Okay, you can say it. You're Merk Hive. Yeah, population, Schwinn and Coach K.
Yeah, I like him a lot, I think. And the fact that he measured the way he did, I think, is really awesome, because he's not a stiff. Like,
no.
Gobert is pretty stiff. And even he, for his size, to be fair, is, like, athletic, I think. But he's a stiff dude.
He's more. He's more like Mitch before he put on the weight. When Mitch was at like 250, but still extremely mobile. Mark is more like that.
Yeah, he is. I think he's. I wouldn't say he's a 99th percentile athlete, but he's like a 90th percentile athlete. For his size, especially the way he moves, how quick his load time is on like second jumps and stuff like that, I think is super impressive. I really, really, really like him. And the thing that I really like about him, and what I think differentiates him from somebody like Gobert, is he is not just a vertical rim running guy. Like, this is a dude, if you, like, you know, one of the things people have always said about Gobert, right? Well, he can't take advantage of the fact that teams hide smaller players on him when they go five out or something, or they switch screens and he can't beat the mismatch in the post. You will not be able to do that to Mark Williams. Mark Williams will be able to punish switches. He'll be able to punish smaller matchups. He has post skills. He has good touchdown there. Like, that is a real quality value that he provides. And at his size, the way he projects defensively, like, he's an older prospect, but he is, I think, I don't know if you agree with this or not, I still think he's like a little, he's a bit raw in terms of, you can kind of see the wheels turning when he's playing instead of just like he's doing shit instinctively in a way. But like, I mean, I don't mind that. I think that's, you kind of have to expect that with most young players, especially young bigs.
You have to dial him back, which is, and so I'll plug the next draft, Strickland, which I think drops the same day as this drop, featuring beloved Knicks superfan Mo at Mo Loves NBA. We talk about the bigs, we talk about four of the bigs, including Mark Williams, the non-Durin bigs, basically the next four up, and we get into like their pros and cons. And so if you want to learn more about Mark, definitely check that out. But yeah, he's, you know, like a lot of these guys with really high block rates. He's very jumpy. He does this thing that's really hilarious and endearing where if he gets a switch, or he can get a switch, he plays up on these people like he's fucking Patrick Beverly. And usually it just ends up with him getting fouled or him fouling them. Mostly that's what happens. But also they'll just like drive past him because, you know, he's agile. But come on, bro, like, you have a 9 foot, a million wingspan. You don't need to be in their shirt. Like, it's just, but it's like an intensity, intimidation thing, right? So, like, I get it in college. So, I'm sure he'll, like most young guys, iron some of that shit out in the first couple of years of his career. You know, Tibbs will get him right if they pick him.
And I think one thing to bring up about him that I do think is, I wouldn't say it's super concerning, but it is something to be aware of. He didn't have the greatest defensive rebound percentage over his time at Duke. So, that's definitely something that he needs to bring up for a center, but he was a really good offensive rebounder. So I just for context, I think his rebound rate on the offensive glass is basically like comparable to what Mitch did this year. Obviously the NBA is different than college basketball, but rebound rate is usually something that translates pretty well across levels. So that is a good thing. He had an absurd PER. He had a 33.1 PER this year, which is insane.
College bigs always have crazy PERs, though.
Yeah, they do. I like that he improved his free throw percentage this year. He went from 53.7 his freshman year to 72.7 this year. Like, there's signs here of a improving player if you just look year to year, and I think that's really encouraging. His block rate is fucking bananas. He had an 11.4 block percentage. Again, college is so weird because you can literally have your center stand at the rim. Like, there's no three, you know, there's no three defensive 3 seconds. So it's always inflated a bit, but he is somebody who will be an effective rim protector. All his measurables scream that also. I think that this is a player that I don't remember if you asked or if somebody did a, I think you might have done a Twitter thing a while back where you were like, who's somebody you think could get drafted higher than people have right now? It might have been around the time of the NCAA tournament, but I said Mark Williams. And that, like, you see how he measured, and then you look at the history of what NBA teams do in the draft. I mean, size, no matter what, people can talk about small ball and playing down and five out and all this shit. At the end of the day, if you have a big guy that can move well and has absurd measurables, NBA teams are going to fall in love. They are going to fall in love. And Mark Williams, to me, I want to get your thoughts on this. I think if the Knicks were to take a big at 11, and for the record, I'm not usually a big fan of taking centers that high in the draft anyway. But like, if they are going to do that, then I would much rather take Mark Williams than Jalen Duren. And the reason isn't that I think Duren sucks or anything like that, but I do think Duren is like the stuff that he does that that people give a lot of value to are like, oh, like his jumper could be a thing and he has playmaking upside. And like, yeah, sure, he has playmaking upside, but like, to me, he is not somebody that ever is going to profile as like, we're running offense through him. He's an offensive hub. I don't think he has that type of game. I don't think he has that type of offensive upside. And as far as the shooting goes, like, I struggled to see him ever being the level of shooter that like it matters. Like, I don't think he's going to have some awesome offensive shooting gravity ever at any point in his career. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know how you think, but like, that's just my thoughts on him because I like the overall skill package he has, but I'm going to take the gigantic dude who moves well and is going to be an awesome rim protector over the guy who is probably going to be a less awesome rim protector, moves really well, and can do a few nice things, but not at an elite level. I don't know if that explained that well, but that's just my thought on it.
Yeah, I can't get there on either of these things personally. Like, I would be extremely disappointed if they took Mark at 11. Not because I don't think he's good, but I think it's a, given all the other things the team needs more long term than short term, I just think it's a waste to pick. He's like a zero upside pick. Like, his ceiling is very good player who you could probably go and sign in restricted free agency one day for like $14 million or something like that. So that's a worthwhile player. It's just my approach toward this draft, if I was the GM of the Knicks, would be weighing upside a whole lot more than in a normal year, just because we have so many solid players already.
What if the Knicks could make like a hush hush wink wink type of agreement with the Hornets where they trade them Mitch for either 13 or 15 and then they use 11 on Mark Williams? Would that change your feeling about it?
So the Knicks would get a second player on top of Mark Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be more okay with that, because whoever they like at 11, there's a decent chance that they'd be there
at 13. Your guy Tari is probably going to be there at 13.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys I like who are going to be there. Like, that's just how it is. Unless you only like one player at that slot, then you'll probably have someone you like. So, you know, it's fine. So in a situation like that, like, I'm definitely hesitant to bring in two young players, but assuming Mitch is going out, that's minutes going out, and then you have your center rotation, which is going to be some combo of Sims, Mark, and power forwards, I guess, depending on who's on the roster, which is fine. I mean, your rim protection is not going to be as good as it was last year, but it'll still be solid. I mean,
and this guy's it'll level up over the course of the year, right? Like, that's what you'd be hoping for anyway.
Yeah, well, more importantly, it would level up over the course of a couple of years. So that was the one thing. Like, I just, there's other guys I fucking love their upside so much at that level, at that pick. Tari Eason, Usman Jiang, guys like that. If Johnny happens to fall, he's in that category as well for me. And
I think he's going to fall. I've like just been seeing people talk about him.
And if you just look at the order, it kind of, I can totally see it. Like with the Wizards, I mean, the Wizards are weird, but at the same time, like, that's Beal minutes, man. That's tough. Like, you got to help please Beal now, you know?
They're going to take Dyson Daniels.
Dyson is the best of both worlds. He helps Bradley Beal right now, and you don't have to compete with small ball minutes by, like, you could play Beal and Johnny together because Beal basically plays point half the time anyway. But like with Dyson, it's a perfect fit. If you think Johnny's the best player, like, to me, Johnny's a better prospect than Dyson. But if you think they're close, then the fit is like 1,000 times cleaner, and it's like fit need complements the pieces that they have. Like their team, they have an identity. Like I'm a fake Wizards fan because I'm here in DC, and they had a thing going for them last year. They had a bunch of tall fucking guys. They spread the floor like crazy. They hit the glass. And when Beal comes back, that's what they want to surround him with. It's shooting and size. And Theisen gives you that. You could put him at the one, and then all of a sudden Brad is the shortest player, and he has like a 10-foot wingspan himself, and is jacked. So it just really is a good fit. And I could totally see them passing on Johnny. I could also see them taking Johnny because they're just like, Johnny's the best player, whatever.
The NBA playoff action is nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the NBA playoffs? With DraftKings same-game parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets like which team will win, total threes made, total rebounds, and more. And boom, you have a shot at an even bigger payout. Right now, all customers can place a same-game parlay with three or more legs and get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet $5 on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code TBPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
It's weird because they're not great, but they have a bunch of like wings.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger wings, but they also have like KCP. I mean, they just have a bunch of like wings. Yeah. So I think Johnny fits in that sense, but I don't know. His skill set to me isn't what they're going to be looking for in this draft. Now, maybe they just have such a high grade on him at some point that they're like, fuck it, we got to take him. Mm-hmm. But to go back, like, just the conversations about Davis, like, I'm not sure what it is about him, but I feel like people have assigned all of these, like, it's probably just because he plays for Wisconsin, but it's like the way people talk about him, you would think he's like a non-athlete.
Because he doesn't have wingspan. Like windmill fucking dunks, and he's not right. Like,
and then you look at the measurements today, and I was telling you, look,
he's like the same size. He has the same standing reach as Sharp.
And I messaged you about this like before. I think I messaged you about this the night before the draft lottery. So this is not like me coping with the Knicks having the 11th pick. And you know this because like for the longest time I've just been like Johnny Davis is boring. I don't care about Johnny Davis.
100 DMs later.
but there is something about him that really reminds me of Brandon Roy. And for anybody who doesn't know, I don't say that lightly because Brandon Roy is quite literally my favorite player of all time. And then you look at the measurements today. They're basically in line with Brandon Roy. And Brandon Roy was like, I'm not saying this like, one, if he's as good as Brandon Roy, by the way, please run to the podium and draft him, New York Knicks. Like, if he's Brandon Roy without the degenerative knee condition.
If he's 75% of Brandon Roy, run to the podium.
Yeah, so like...
That's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so what just stands out to me is, you know, look, like, he's basically got prototype wing measurements for a 2-3 wing, not for a 3-4, but for a 2-3, he's got like pretty good size, pretty good wingspan. To the points you've raised about him, good rebounder, really good defensive player, intense defensive player. I'm not that worried about his inefficiency as a scorer because I think it's like he did not have the skill set to be a 32 usage guy, but that is what was asked of him at Wisconsin. And he also had really shitty floor spacing. So it's like the outcome is that, right? The outcome is that he ends up having to, it punishes his efficiency. And I think like I just think he's being punished. I just think like there's way too much down talk. Like it just feels like people are assuming he is this low upside guy. And I just don't see it like that really. Like I think it's easy to mistake boring with low upside is the way I would put it. And
yeah, we when see you that see every year, like with Franz.
Yeah, and like when you see this motherfucker taking like 15 pull-up middies a game, you're just like, eh, low upside, can't get to the rim. Like, you just assign a lot of value to that without appropriately adjusting for context. And like, I think I want to shift a little bit. I think this is a good place to this Johnny Davis conversation leads also, I think, to Benedict Mathurin, another player, another wing who a lot of people like. And
Dyson.
Yeah. But I don't want to talk about Dyson because I don't give a shit about him. The Knicks are not drafting Dyson Daniels.
Berman published a Dyson propaganda. G League's Dyson Daniels could be intriguing Knicks PG option. I'm looking while you're talking to see if there's anything sourced at all.
You already know it's bullshit because there's no fucking chance the Knicks are like, this motherfucker can be our point guard. Like, can you imagine being like, Tibbs, we got you a point guard, finally, dude. Like, what the fuck? Tibbs would probably have an aneurysm if they did that. No, but like, a lot of people like Mathurin a lot. I think he's an intriguing prospect. And I guess like...
Real quick plug, aside from Biggs, Mathurin is the other player we talked about on the most recent draft, Strickland. Mo is a big fan, and we went pretty deep dive, so check that out.
Good. I will check that out. But like, I'm correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure Davis gets to the rim at a better rate than Mathurin. I think he.
Neither of them gets to the rim much, but Mathurin probably does. Mathurin gets to the rim, but not like he gets to the rim other ways by cutting and coming off curls and shit like that.
I'm talking about like on the ball, like dribble penetration.
Neither of them really do it significantly. At all, to be honest.
Okay. And I just like, you know, I don't know what Mathurin does as a creator that people are assigning a lot of upside to him, whereas Davis is looked at as like not an upside guy. And they're both second year players, right? So I would assume they're similar ages.
Mathurin and Davis?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both young sophomores.
Yeah, so like it's not like one of them is significantly younger than the other. Mathurin definitely has more vertical pop. I don't think he's necessarily a better athlete, though. I don't think like vertical pop is not the only measure of athleticism.
Yeah, they're both athletic, but you're right. They're completely different kind of athletes. Mathurin's no slouch in like all the other types of athleticism. It's just like all his 2K athleticism points are in just catching fucking bangers on people, like 1 foot, 2 foot, no feet, cutting, fast break, half court, whatever, no space, all the space. He just has crazy bounce, as we all saw in the tournament. But Davis has like football athleticism. Like he's just good in like tight spaces, and his first step is really good, and he moves around screens like fucking Slender Man and shit like that. So He's he has some pop at the rim. People forget, like when you have a decent standing reach and big hands like he does, he can run into some easy buckets that way. Mathurin, I think a lot of it. There's two things that I think cause Mathurin to have that like top 10 label follow him a lot more stickier. One is Arizona was really fucking good, and he is the best player. So That will always affect your stock, right? Like, they were arguably the best team. And then, two, he was one of those, like, Johnny was a surprise breakout. Ivy and Mathurin were not. Not everybody, but many people tabbed them as likely breakouts the next year. Mathurin's stats in a lesser role last year were outstanding. He shot over 40% from three. His rebound percentage was higher as a freshman, like 16 to 12. So he had great statistical markers, and he was young for his class as a freshman. And he was the guy, he kind of underwhelmed after that at FIBA as the guy for Canada. But, you know, that was still, even if it was underwhelming, it was still kind of a feather in his cap, right? He was the guy on a team, on a competitive team. So, he had that coming into the season, and if you're scoring 17 a game as the best player on the arguably the best team, it's hard to lose that, right? So, like, other players would have to really take it from you, and this draft wasn't the draft where there was a bunch of fucking beastly guys in the top 10 just, like, just taking those spots, like what'll happen next year. So that's kind of why it stuck with him. Whereas Johnny, is as easy as it was for people to fall in love with him, it's easy for people to fall out of love, because we haven't seen it for 2 years. We've only seen it for 1 year, and then we saw the efficiency tail off in the later half of the season after his really hot start when he was in the Player of the Year conversation. He got dinged up. Wisconsin wasn't so great. They weren't the worst, but they weren't really that good. So, you know, his stock has fallen for whatever fucking reason. I'll say this about Mathurin. Like, I was down on him for a while, because I still am a little bit. To me, the question that I always come back to is, and I had a Twitter poll on this, but it's impossible for this poll to be useful because most of my followers are Knicks fans. I was like, who do you think is going to be better in 5 years, him or Quentin Grimes? And to me, it's not an open and shut question for Mathurin. And if I'm picking a fucking perimeter shooting guard who doesn't drive much, then the answer to that needs to be yes for me to pick him and take some of those minutes away from Grimes. And Grimes is a damn good shooter, elite. And the question is, Mathurin has to be elite, right? Like, he's better at some things than Grimes, like especially athletically and finishing. He's much better. They're both really good connector passers. But at first I was like, maybe Mathurin is a really good shooter, but not an elite shooter. But I think I've come back to being a little higher on his shooting. And the reason is I kind of dove into his stats, and he has some weird stuff going on with his threes, where like on unguarded catch and shoot threes, he shot really poorly. And I think that's just random noise. And I think if that, he shot 37 or 38% overall, despite shooting like 23% on unguarded catch and shoot threes. So if that bounces to a normal level, then all of a sudden he's back at like 40, 41 overall, like he was as a freshman, which is on good volume, like 12 or 13 per 100. So he's probably closer to a very elite shooter than he is a just good but not great shooter. But it's still close enough, and maybe this is more about me being high on Grimes than anything, that I because Mathurin's not going to be better than Grimes on defense, full stop. Like, Grimes is really fucking good on defense. So I just don't, and you know, he's not some 7 foot wingspan guy either, Mathurin. So that's why I was kind of down on him. But then just looking at his stats again, the most boring fucking stat of all, one of the most boring stats you could pull, is 2-point percentage. And his 2-point percentage was like 52 or something, which is really good. Paolo Banchero was 53. And yeah, Paolo takes a lot more shots and they're harder shots or whatever, but like, most guards or perimeter players are not in the 50s on 2-point shots. Davis is like 41 or something like that, and most guards are closer to that. Ivy is at 54 because he's a crazy vertically horizontally explosive downhill guard. But aside from Ivy, you don't really see it. And the thing is, like, Mathurin, he may not create that much going downhill, but if he's taking a shot inside the 3-point line, he may not have access to all the same shots that other dudes do. But like, if it's a floater, he's good at floaters. If he's near the rim, he's fucking dunking it. So there's a high probability it's going to go in, and he's going to get those dunks way more just because of how athletic and strong he is. So shit like that really matters. So it's, you know, if the Knicks picked him, I'm no longer putting him in the category of disappointing pick. It's more in the category of boring pick. Not the pick I would make, but I could see why they would make it, just because we're not good at 2-point shooting and we don't have athletes. Like, it is what it is. Grimes is a lot of things, but he's not a good 2-point shooter, nor is he a particularly great athlete. So I could see it, especially with the pedigree and all that, second year players, pull up shooting, all that, etc.
I have a question for you about Mathurin. You messaged me a little while ago about some fucking arbitrary set of numbers that you were like, is this concerning to you about Mathurin?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I forget the exact thresholds, but somebody tweeted it. Basically, it was some combination of low rebound percentage, low defensive rebound percentage, low steal generation, low blocks generation, and low defensive box plus minus. And if you look at the list of players who meet those low, who are below a certain threshold, which includes Mathurin, it's basically a bunch of bums. So no player who has reached those thresholds became good, and they're arbitrary. It's not, they're not clean numbers like 1 steal percent or something like that. There's a lot of random decimals like 0.6 or whatever. But it is concerning to me because I think people are penciling him in to have the D part of 3 and D automatically be fine. And I don't think he's going to be ass or anything at defense, especially if he comes to a team like the Knicks where they're fundamentally sound all the time and they can even play shitty defenders and get away with it fine. Like, I don't want to concede mediocre defense just because our defense is good, if that makes sense. Like, if our defense is good, I would like our defense to become better. Like, we see how these playoffs are. Like, look at Boston. Like, you need guys who can fucking lock up. And yeah, it's cool that the Knicks
didn't
can
lock
pull
up yesterday.
I didn't even watch the game, but I believe you. I don't know what the fuck Jimmy did to get that many unethical buckets. But I'm assuming your boy, your new son, Max Strus, tore them up.
Yeah, he had a good second half. He struggled in the first half, but
he got it together.
Yeah, yeah.
To make his father proud. but yeah, I. One of my pet peeves is guys who is people online who label players as 3 and D when they're not elite at 3 or not really good at D, because there's a lot of players in the NBA who are like kind of 3 and D, but usually the ones who are real 3 and D players make a lot of fucking money. They're not all-stars, but they make money. It's like Mikal Bridges type people, or even Grimes, who's going to make a lot of money in his career. Like, don't get it twisted. You know, KCP, right? Made a lot of money in his career, shit like that. So
I think like the top end version of this would be Clay, right? Like, obviously, yeah, he's a god mode shooter, but
yeah, he's the god tier version of that for right. Sure. So you know, maybe, and Mathurin's not without upside either. Like, he can definitely, if he tightens up his handle, all of a sudden he might become a whole lot more than a 3 and D player, right? Like, that's, we've seen other players do that. It's not impossible. So I could see the vision for sure. It's more about other guy, it's more about me preferring Johnny a whole lot. It's Johnny just has such bad context, and I'm really trying to swing for guys who have upside skills, who play defense, or upside on ball skills, but can hit spot up shots and play defense. That's really what I'm looking for in this draft. Someone who, at worst, will be a reliable, maybe not super impactful floor spacer, but they're not going to be a liability spacing the floor. And I don't think Johnny Davis is that. He shot 47% on unguarded catch and shoot threes, and that's pretty fucking good. So not really worried about that. He played a tertiary role on Team USA with Jaden Ivey and Chet, and he was perfectly fine at that. So and then guys like Tari, same deal. Like, 36% shooter and getting better, 80% from the line. Like, you know, those guys will play D and space the floor, but they all have upside on ball. I'm just over the safe picks right now for this Knicks team. It's not going to do anything from us. And because of our roster crunch, it lessens the probability of us being able to unlock and then showcase that upside, because Quickly is going to have upside unlocked next year, and he's going to showcase it for many minutes, hopefully. Same with Obi. Same with a lot of other guys. Same with Grimes. So even if you do draft somebody, like, we know the consolidation is coming, and if it doesn't come this year, then the path to showing upside, both either for the Knicks or for trade value, is pretty tough. So, you know, when my inevitable board comes out and pieces come out, you'll see all the guys I'm high on have on-ball skills, can defend, and can knock down open threes, because that's my jam this year. So a lot of guys, fortunately, fit that description to different degrees. Even Mathurin does a little bit. Even Dyson does a little bit. But really, Tari, Johnny, Jang, those are my three boys, assuming nobody else drops, like AJ Griffin or something.